Our police protect, they patrol, and we've given them the right to use deadly force. Is it used responsibly? Are America's police connected to the neighborhoods they serve? Now, a special presentation, Beyond Officer-Involved Shootings. Here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
It's interesting. This has been in the making for some time now. It started with conversations with two gentlemen right across from me. First, Chief Burbank of Salt Lake City. Chief, welcome to the program. And I can remember you and I said, you know, we really ought to do a town hall meeting on this. And here we are. It took a little doing. And
a little time, but absolutely proud to be here. Thank you.
I so appreciate you joining us. And then also this guy right across from me, too. And by the way, boy, the Tesoro Refinery's money is safe right now. I've got the sheriff of Salt Lake County. I've got the chief of police here in studio with us. But Jim Winder, what a pleasure, too. And when I mentioned that we were thinking of a town hall meeting, boy, you just said, I'm in, and I appreciate you being in. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Doug.
And then also joining us here in studio today, we wanted to bring in some other voices as well, not simply law enforcement, but also a professor in the College of Social Work and the chair of practice and mental health at the University of Utah, and also oversees a program, Peace and Conflict Studies. We thought Dr. David Darazotes would be a perfect guest for this program. And Professor, thank you for joining us, and I hope I didn't slaughter the last name too badly.
Just slightly wounded.
Give us the correct pronunciation.
As far as I can tell, it's Darazotes.
Darazotes.
Yes, sir.
Got it. Thank you so much, Professor, for being here. By the way, we'll also be joined later on in the program. We'll be talking with Juan Manuel Ruiz, who is the president for the Latin American Chamber of Commerce in Taylorsville. We'll also have our Peter Seymour, who will be joining us on the program. We have been asking for your questions and your comments. And by the way, gentlemen, we have had just some great comments. We opened up a phone line. We dedicated a complete line for the last day or so here at KSL to people who perhaps would not be able to call in, maybe were not comfortable in calling in, and they could leave their questions. So we've got a lot of those. We've also had questions being posted on our Facebook page as well. I want to keep this hopefully as informal as possible and just have a real discussion. If something seems to take root, we'll run with it and we'll go from there. But I thought it would be interesting if we could just get some general thoughts to kind of kick things off. And perhaps, Chief, we could start with you. This town hall meeting, maybe I could ask the question, and you can add certainly additional thoughts. But what do you personally, representing the great police department here in Salt Lake City, what do you hope happens from this town hall meeting?
Well, I'm hopeful that this will be the beginning of some discussion that needs to take place, because what we've encountered across the country is a lot of finger-pointing, saying the police are doing this and communities are doing this, and we've had riots. I mean, it's not been productive at all as far as conversation. And what we need to move is, what is our expectation of our police force? And it's not enough to say that there's bias in the system. We know that there is bias in the criminal justice system. We have over-incarcerated people for years and years. We have over-incarcerated people of color, and especially young men of color. How can we change that, and what is our role as the police that we need to look at? And, Doug, it may be as simple as, let's not do traffic stops anymore, or maybe we don't respond to certain things, or that is the expectation that the community has, that we need to say, all right, how are we going to solve this? As opposed to, I mean, what we find in our own state and throughout the nation is every time you have, it goes to immigration. Well, let's create laws that prohibit this. Let's create laws against, drug use. Let's create laws against panhandling and all these other things. Well, all these laws simply have one big hammer that says, let's incarcerate people for this. Well, that's not solving our problems. And so hopefully this is the step down the road to solve our problems here locally, which is what is very important to me.
And back in the 1980s and early 1990s, we not only dropped that hammer, but we dropped it with a mandated sentence. Has that been a good thing in your opinion? And I'll ask that of the sheriff as well.
Well, the one thing that I would look at, I mean, when we started down the road of mandatory sentencing, it was nice because you could say, okay, this person who's committed this crime will be out of society, not causing any more crimes. But the problem is those people that I arrested, young in my career, who had minimum mandatory sentences, got out and they were then committing crimes again after getting out. So we didn't solve recidivism by mandatory sentencing. We have never solved recidivism, which is extremely high in this nation. And where you see recidivism drop is when we do social programs, alternatives to incarceration. Jim's got some things going on in the jail. I mean, these are the programs that solve the community problems. Don't just put people away for a certain amount of time.
Jim, let's get your thoughts on this. As sheriff of Salt Lake County, as we wade into this town hall, what are you hoping for? What can we do here?
I think the chief has eloquently identified a variety of issues. To me, if I were to, you know, kind of summarize, I think it is about ensuring that we trust each other. And that is that statement sounds perhaps trite or overly simplistic, but I believe it's at the core of this conversation. If people simply don't believe what I or the chief or other officers say, or, and I'll even widen that, what our criminal justice system is saying, then we've got fundamental problems. And so if we don't trust each other, we're starting from a place that you know, I don't know how you correct the operational issues without that core.
Mm-hmm. Mandatory sentencing?
Disastrous. For the reasons that the chief has indicated, empirical evidence is clear that incarceration and length of incarceration does not modify behavior. And we have some wonderful studies out of the University of Utah in our own facility that indicate length of stay has very little correlation with recidivism reduction, and I'd even go stronger and say with behavior modification. What you've got to do is you've got to address the core issues that result in criminality, the criminogenic factors, which are social contact, ability to make a living wage, education, self-esteem, and one of the huge issues, which of course is substance abuse. So if we're not addressing those, you know, locking people into the jail, despite what maybe others have promoted for years, it just does not work, Doug. So there's a lot of shifts that need to be made in thinking.
Professor Derizotis, let's talk about your thoughts on this. What are you hoping from this town hall meeting, and what do you think can be accomplished? And how serious is this problem between police and our local communities?
Well, I can't say what the sheriff and the chief said any more eloquently, so I'll take a little bit different perspective, a bigger one. You know, all of us heard the news this morning, right? All over the world there's violence, and there's a difficulty that we as humans have with people that look different than us, that have different beliefs, and so on and so forth. That's always been the case as far as we can tell. So I think that I like what Eric Holder said, that this crisis is an opportunity, you know, that you know, all the reactions across our country about the police shootings and violence gives us an opportunity again to start talking with each other. And that's probably the message I want to bring today is that, I mean, if you look at our high schools, Doug, most high schools in the country have a debate team. There's not one that I know of that has a dialogue team. Debate is about, you know, who's going to win, who's going to lose. It's like a football game, right?
Wow.
Dialogue is about listening for understanding. And I think winning is like sugar in our brains as human beings. You know, it gives us a quick kick when we...
Gives us a rush.
Yes, it does. And it's easy to oversimplify the other by stereotyping him or her. You know, all police are this, all people of color are that, all white people are this, all people of that faith are that, and so on and so forth. We all know that how easy that is to do. I think we're capable of more. And I think that starts probably with our children, you know, and as adults, I think we have a responsibility now to model dialogue. And it's going to be messy. It doesn't immediately result in a kumbaya, right? But I was just talking with the chief about starting a dialogue, maybe on campus, maybe at the library, we haven't decided, where we get officers and folks from the community, you know, with a few guidelines, which are things like being respectful,
yeah,
you know, to each other,
yeah,
avoiding making each other wrong, you know, and try to get to know each other. And the last thing I'll say at this point is, you know, I was involved in the Midnight Basketball program years back, and when we evaluated it, one of the kids said, who identified as a gang kid, he said, it's harder to shoot somebody after you play ball with them. Boy. In a way, that's a summary. You know, if I know your story, if I know you a little bit, you know, things change and you're not the stereotype, you know, a person with a uniform, a person of a different skin color, and so on and so forth.
You know, what I've just heard from these three gentlemen, it just perfectly sets the stage, perfectly. And the reaction that the professor got when he used that word dialogue, I mean, you think of it. I mean, whether it's on a, we all like to win a debate, we all like to win a, but to have a productive dialogue, and boy, I think that set the tone for what I hope we do here. Let's take a break. When we come back, I'd like to end, boy, we have so many questions that are pending. We have people who have asked them in various ways. We'll also be getting some statistics and numbers that I'll be interested in our law enforcement professionals reacting to with Peter Seymour, and he shared those numbers with the sheriff and with the chief here, and we'll get their reaction. But when we come back, what has changed? You know, something has changed. You know, a cog has slipped. Is it the civility? Is it the mandatory sentencing? Is it what has changed? Is it we in the nasty media? I hear that a lot, by the way. And we'll come back and we'll discuss exactly that as our town hall meeting continues here at KSL News Radio.
Beyond officer-involved shootings on KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
And again, a big thanks to those that are participating in the program today, to the sheriff of Salt Lake County, to the chief of the of police here in Salt Lake City, and also the chair of practice in mental health at the University of Utah College of Social Work and Peace and Conflict Studies. So thank you again for being right here. I left a question hanging before we took the break. What has changed? What has happened? And it's been interesting, some of the response that we've had. Usually it's been some of the shorter comments on Facebook, people speculating as to what has changed. But maybe we could start with you first, Sheriff. In your opinion, you've been in law enforcement a long time, as has Chief Burbank. What has changed?
I believe that we have experienced some societal changes, one of which is two factors. One is a tendency at isolation, whether it is isolation as an individual. We see in the configurations of our cities and towns and suburbs a situation where people tend to not really interact in real ways. We tend to kind of go to the event and then go home, and our kids are taken to soccer and then taken back home. And my point is it doesn't generate a sense of community and open conversation and dialogue. And so the less we kind of interact with people on those bases, the kind of more entrenched we become in our own opinions. And then the second piece is the information opportunities for people. If I want to sustain my beliefs, if I am a conservative, I know where I can go on television and the internet and anywhere else to have my beliefs validated. So I'm not really seeking information. I'm seeking confirmation of what I believe, and therefore I become even more and more entrenched, which then also leads to me kind of only participating or hanging out with those who think and behave as I do. And that therein lies, to the professor's point, it drives us to cliques. And click is a kind word for, you know, he made a very intuitive point that if you look at conflict throughout history and you know, it's always about the difference. I'm this and you're that. I'm Bosnian, you're, you know, Serbian. I'm Hutu, you're, you know, Tutsi. I'm
white
and
black.
There you go. Yeah. And so that kind of segregation, to use maybe a hot button term, really drives a lot of problems. So I think we're becoming that.
You know, I thought it was interesting. You talked about isolation, and then you talked about how we can kind of pick and choose. We can, I call it cocooning. When I go out and I talk to groups, I talk about how you can cocoon yourself with only thought that reinforces what you already believe and makes you comfortable and makes you feel however you want to feel. And we have that smorgasbord now in everything, blogs, traditional media, publications, whatever it might be, even the associations that we choose to have. Professor, let's talk with you a moment. What has changed in our society that has caused some of these rifts, especially between the public and the police?
I'll take this larger perspective again. I think we're in an era, like Shakespeare said, to be or not to be. Are we going to survive? It's really come down to that, because we have the technology capable of, you know, solving problems like we could house everyone on the planet. We could feed everyone on the planet. You know, we have body cameras that are incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, we could use that technology to destroy ourselves, or we could use it to create a lifestyle for people that where everybody has their minimal needs met. What we're not good at is dealing with differences. And, you know, all through history, violence has seldom resulted in peace. You know, and I'm not saying that there's never a time. And this is the difficulty, right? I'm not saying there's never a time to use force and defense, but making those decisions is very complex and difficult, and requires wisdom. You know, so boy, I empathize with both sides of these conflicts. How difficult it is, for example, to be an officer and to make those split second decisions, you know, out of fear, and also how difficult it is to be someone on the street, particularly a young man of color, and how scary that is based on, you know, we know that they disproportionately end up being shot. You know, that gun violence is a leading cause of death, for example, for Afro-American men. We know things like that already. We can understand. And as a white male, I feel like I have a responsibility, you know, with the privilege I have to work with, especially with other white folk, to talk about difficult issues. And I think one of the most difficult ones is race. Y'all remember The Breakfast Club, right? The film?
Sure.
I think it's time for Breakfast Club 2, and it would be about race. Can you imagine, you know, five or six kids coming into study hall on Saturday of different color? And to watch that conversation, you know, that's hard for most of us. And I have a cartoon here. If we had TV, I could show it to all of you. But it came out of The Week, just this, the Journal of the Week, and it says National Conversation About Race. And it shows a group of people of color talking about it, and on the other side, a group of what looks like white folk. And of course, they're not talking across those divisions.
They're talking to each other.
Yeah. So I am optimistic, though. I think it's the last thing I'll say in this round is our peace and conflict study program has more than doubled just in a year. And all over the country, this kind of program is popular with young people. I think young people get it, a lot of them, that we have to do something different or resolving you know, conflict, whether it's in Pakistan or Salt Lake City, right, whether it's in a marriage or in a family. Or it's across countries.
Chief, if you wouldn't mind, could we get your response on the other side of our news?
Oh, yeah, not a problem at all.
And we'll take a deep break, a short break, rather, and then we'll also have Peter Seymour, who will be joining us, and then we're going to start getting into your specific questions. But the question that we have been floating is, what has happened? What has changed? Why are there the perceptions or the realities or these conflicts that are unfolding, these situations? And we'll get into that more with Chief Burbank when we come back here at KSL News Radio. And the town hall meeting continues today until 12 o'clock noon.